coffee got cold. I got cold coffee.
Buccaneers fans, here we are. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is here. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here as well. And a lot going on this week as JoeBucksFan.com returns from the NFL annual meeting. All kinds of juice from Team Glazer and Jason Light, Todd Bowles. But the star of the show is Ira Kaufman himself. He's the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the custodian of Canton, Uncle Ira, the king of Newport Richey. And all the fun is presented by Bill Curry Ford. Don't play games. BillCurryFord.com. That's where you shop. Everybody shops for a vehicle online, Ira. You go to BillCurryFord.com. That is the family name, Curry. 63 years in Tampa, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Still family owned. Sean Sullivan is the GM. He's our draft guru here as well. And he'll help you personally. He'll give you the Ira Kaufman discount. He'll give you $500 just for ordering a new vehicle. No deposit. So many great offers. Right now, you can still order, for now, still order a new 2023 Ford Bronco. And those are very difficult to come by. So go for it. All the information is on the website. Bill Curry Ford, they sponsor all of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com. Nationwide lifetime warranty on new vehicles. I could go on and on, Ira, but you know what people have to do.
You know, Steve, I'm getting excited. I think we're about 4 weeks away from the draft, and we'll be at a draft party, Steve. And I'm looking forward to that. We've had great turnouts in the past. We get great guests. You know, Sean Sullivan from Bill Curry Ford's going to be there. We got other people popping in and out. Could be former Buck players. You never know. Some teams don't have a first-round pick. Lee, I know the Bucks are picking 19th, but the Vegas odds are out, Lee. And if these odds makers are right, and I don't think they are, but if they are right, the Bucks might be ticketed for a top five pick in the 2024 draft. Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Whoa.
Lee, but I wrote a column about Todd Bowles basically saying if he goes down, Lee, if he goes down, he's going down his way. He's not going down without a fight. He's going to be more assertive. I think it's fair to say Bowles was behind the dumping of Ryan Succop. I think Bowles was behind who they were going to keep in terms of Lavonte David and Jamel Dean. I think that was a Bowles call all the way. We shall see. Buck fans, Lee, not all of them, but you read social media like I do, Lee. More than a few Buck fans seem to have already made their mind up that Bowles is not the guy, whether that's right or wrong, Lee. And they're very fierce in their convictions, Lee. I'm a little bit surprised. The Bucks weren't terrible last year. They were mediocre, but they did win a terrible division. But there's something about Todd Bowles that's driving them crazy. If they had their way, they would dump him right now. Reading Joel Glazer's quotes, you know, to Steve Isbitz yesterday in Phoenix, it seems like, Lee, Joel Glazer doesn't want to fire Todd Bowles. I believe that. He's going into this season not wanting to fire Todd Bowles at the end of the year, unless he has to. And he did talk about, Lee, and you've mentioned this before, he called it a disadvantage for Todd Bowles in the circumstances that he got the job in late March, right about this time, a year ago. And Joe Glazer hasn't forgotten about it, Lee. And I think that's an indication that, you know, I think Bowles gets a little bit of a pass. And all eyes are, what are you going to do for me this fall?
Well, who's been writing about that for darn near a year?
You have.
Yes. So, surprise, 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 as Gomer Pyle would say. As far as the Bowles angst out there with the fans, not all, but a sect of them, they didn't like his hire from day one.
Right.
And the fact that he monkeyed with an offense that didn't need to be monkeyed with, and it saw the result was Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, having his only losing record, a putrid offense, putrid. That just added fuel to the fire. I still think that a good chunk of the people that are anti-Bowles still have the memory of Cooper Kupp's catch in the playoffs 2 years ago fresh in their mind. They blame Bowles. They think everybody was out of position, which they were. If you go back and look at the play, at the snap, the Bucks players, the defenders, they weren't even set. They weren't even ready. And people, and I don't think you're wrong, blame Bowles for that. Because guess what? The defensive coordinator is in charge of the defense. So I'm not saying he's blameless in that. Is it unwarranted? Maybe. But I think it goes back to that. And last year really did nothing for these people to forget that raw incident and in Tampa Bay at the Lighthouse, where the Bucs choked away what would have been one of the greatest wins, not just in Bucs history, in NFL history, the way they came back.
That's a tremendous point, Lee. I didn't even think about that in terms of the venom towards Bowles. It's really thick right now. It's thick. And you made a great point, Lee. It was the defining moment of that season was that Cooper Kupp catch and a defensive breakdown to boot. And Bowles has to take responsibility. Steve, before you weigh in, one more point, I think, in terms of some of the fans' wrath towards Bowles, Steve, I think can be attributed directly to this idea that he should have fired Leftwich in midseason or at the bye week. I think that's another big part of it, Steve.
There's a lot of layers to it. It all comes back to losing. But I think the organization, and having spent a lot of time around the organization in Phoenix, you know, organizations move on. Companies move on. Last year isn't important. They're on to the new year. Fans hang on. They don't forget. They dig in. They're pissed off. They hold grudges. They see a bad game, and they're ready to throw the guy overboard and a big-time screw-up, and they're done. And that's the difference between an ownership group, GMs, and management, and fans. And it's fine. It's the beauty of sports. That's part of the reason that that we love it so much, and why organizations don't necessarily understand the fans. And I think some of that is going on here for all the reasons you mentioned. But that Bulls game in against the Rams, made an impact on a lot of people who were sitting there watching it. Every Bucks fan was watching it, and people don't forget. But of course, it just comes back to wins and losses. Lee made an important point regarding the offense, because the offense was bad last year. So that, in my opinion, is a very strong argument to why Todd Bowles cannot take a step back this year and keep his job. Because why should the defense be worse this year? I don't have an answer to that. I don't really think it should be at all. And why shouldn't the offense be better? I don't have an answer to that, unless this coordinator and this group that they put together is incapable of scoring 18 points a game. So if the defense is just as good and the offense does a little better, you better win 8 games again. Otherwise, what are you doing?
Very fair, right? That's fair. And Lee, I'll make this point. I don't think the Glazers at the end of the year are not going to mark Todd Bowles on a curve. Lee saying, in the back of their mind, well, he didn't have Tom Brady. I don't think that's going to be a factor at all, Lee, and I don't think it should be a factor at all. You work with what you got. Joel Glazer and Jason Light, like the core group of players on this team, and just because the quarterback situation, Lee, as we speak in late March, is unsettled, and even though the Vegas oddmakers got the Bucks pegged for the basement of a lousy division, Lee, I don't think that's going to matter for what Steve says is right. You better win 9 games, 8 with a reason. You know, you go 7-10, Lee, you're not going to come back. Probably not.
Sage, no need to talk about 6 win seasons in late March. That would be a disaster. However, we can talk about disasters with Florida's Elite Restoration. When you have that issue, that disaster, that flood that ruins your home, fire, mold, storm damage, whatever it is, you call Florida's Elite Restoration 24/7. You tell them you heard about them from the Ira Kaufman podcast or Joe Bucks fan. And if you need their services after a free assessment, they will give you $500 toward your deductible, or that's just cash back. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Get there, learn about their services so you're prepared. You know who to call when that happens in your business or in your home. And it does happen. It really does. Florida's Elite Restoration. They will fight for your insurance money. Josh Martin, he's the owner, big Bucks fan, and he spent 14 years as an insurance adjuster. So that means he knows the game. He knows how to handle them and to get the most for you. They love doing that. They're a family-owned business. They're good at it. And they're also good at taking care of Bucks fans because they are giving $1,000 in prizes to our draft party for fans for us to give away that night. $1,000, and that's not a gift card for a disaster. That's cash in the form of a gift card. That's going to be great. That is at our Big Storm Brewery, Ybor City, April 27th, 7 o'clock roll in. Draft starts at 8, and then the fun goes on till it's done and beyond. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Thank you. Lee, I know you had something you wanted to throw in here, and we've got a lot of defense to talk about in this podcast, Ira, because we're going to hit offense in the next podcast. I got a lot of juice from Jason Light and from Todd Bowles.
Before I get going here, Ira, I got to tip you off. I've got an interesting explanation about how fans perceive the team. I'm not just talking about this year. I'm talking about overall and how that may be lost on the powers that be at one buck. To Steve's point about the defense, you can make an argument defense might be better this year. They pretty much have brought back the core of the defense. Devontae David's back. Jamel Dean's back. Winfield. Carlton Davis.
Vita Vea.
Here's why I think there's a possibility. Might be slim. Defense could be better. If for somehow, some way, some reason, the light bulb goes on with Joe Tryon Shoyanka, this could be a better defense.
And I'll throw Logan Hall in there with you.
Fair.
Steve, I've long been the opinion of this. Now, I'm going to give you guys a little historical perspective. Kevin Ross is a cornerback's coach on the Bucs, and he was part of a very, very good Chiefs secondary. You know, maybe in the early 90s, they had that guy Albert Lewis. They had Deron Cherry. They had some really good defensive backs. But, Lee, the pass rush was mediocre. And as a result, you know, you can't cover for 5 seconds, Lee. You can't do it. I don't care who you are. My point is, Lee, that you can have the cream of the crop secondary. And I know you're with me on this, Lee. You got to disrupt the quarterback. You got to make him uncomfortable. And I'll tell you what, you know, give him credit, Lee. Give him credit. Bowles is masterful at doing it with tactics, you know, and moving people around. He's very, very good at it. It's probably the best attribute of Bowles as a defensive coordinator.
Sage, last six games of the year, and we're talking about fan perception, but reality is often what creates the fan perception. The Bucs allowed 28.3 per game over the last six games last year. That's horrible. Horrible.
It is horrible. And, Steve, it happened to coincide with Shaq Barrett going out. You know, Shaq Barrett is not Bruce Smith, but he's the best they got, Lee. He's not Gaines Adams either. And he's not Gaines Adams. And so, Lee, with Barrett coming back off an injury that you never really know, Lee, I know you're right there with me. I know Steve's talking about this defense and Lee's talking about this defense. They got pieces. But, Lee, they got to get the quarterback uncomfortable. Yep. And the way things are right now, I don't know if they got enough pieces to do that.
Not yet. But like I said, if the light bulb goes on for, you know, Shoyanka and for Logan Hall, like you said, here's my example of the fan perception. It relates to today, the current situation. This was back, 2011. A frequent commenter on JoeBucksFan.com, and I tried to tell this guy that Dominic was a better general manager than Bruce Allen and Bruce Almighty. That's like Baron Gonorrhea and syphilis, but oh well. but Bruce Allen was brutal. And I tried to make the point that Dominic was a better GM. And at the time, we all thought Josh Freeman was the next big thing. And there were some other guys on that team that were playing well that Dominic had acquired. And this guy finally got fed up with me and he said, Bruce Allen got this team to the playoffs twice. How many times has Dominic got this team to the playoffs? There you go. Fans want results.
And Lee, I shouldn't even have to say it, but that's not fair to Dominic. He came in after the veteran purge. There goes Brooks. There goes Hilliard. There goes Dunn. I mean, that's not fair to Dominic.
But from a fan's perception, Bruce Allen got these guys to the playoffs. Dominic never did. Therefore, Bruce Allen was better.
Steve, even the Glazers didn't expect much out of the 2009 Bucks, and they didn't get much out of them either.
0% financing on new 22 Ford Mustangs through April 3rd. So many great offers. BillCurryFord.com. Check it out.
And Steve, since we're talking about the Buck defense, Steve, I want you guys to know that I feel validated today. Another reason I'm a particularly chipper going into this podcast. I feel validated by an item that I saw on Joe Buck's fan website. I believe it was today, maybe yesterday.
Winfield? Steve, you might be able- Winfield?
Yes, Mr. Winfield. Steve, I want you to talk a little bit about it because I believe on the last podcast I was pretty definitive about their plans for Winfield and what they weren't going to ask Winfield to do. And Steve, what'd you find out there in Phoenix?
Well, you see, it serves you right, Ira. You took this podcast in a different direction, and I was going to open up this podcast by praising you about the Winfield thing that I, you know, put to Bulls.
Steve, feel free. Feel free.
So here we are, 18 minutes later, I'm finally getting to it. All right, Sage, look, you've been saying for months that the Bucks do not want Antoine Winfield Jr. to play nickel anymore. They don't want it. Nobody else is saying it. It wasn't written anywhere, but you've been telling us that, and the Sage knows things. And I asked Todd Bowles about this directly yesterday, and or on yesterday. The days are running together, Ira. It's one of those things. Bowles was adamant that no more nickel for Antoine Winfield, saying exactly what the Sage was saying. He said he really wants him to stay at free safety, and he thinks he can get more interceptions staying at safety. Winfield's a good ball hawk, and he lost some of that last year, and he's a good tackler and all that stuff, but they now, of course, you have to tackle at nickel, but no more nickel. He said, quote, that's the goal. And I asked him who the starting nickel is. Is he on the roster? He said, probably not. He said, we have a nickel, but, that guy's probably not here yet, and they're looking for him. So
I was just gonna ask you if you thought that Bowles thought the guy was on the current roster.
No, he didn't rule out Logan Ryan coming back. But bottom line is they're looking. I think they're looking in the draft. And we knew that they were shopping or looking for a safety on our last podcast. We talked about it. And the guy from the Rams, whose name escapes me right now, they didn't get him. He had some nickel experience. So they're looking, Ira. They're looking. But kudos to you. Antoine Winfield will be playing free safety this season. Bowles said he talked to Winfield about it, and that's where they're going to put him.
Steve, what impressions did you get from either Light or Bowles in terms of fortifying the D-line and perhaps looking to bring back either Hicks or Golston?
Hicks, at the NFC Coaches Breakfast, Todd Bowles said that he wants to re-sign Akeem Hicks. He wants to do it, and that he has personally been staying in touch with Hicks. He thought he was a good fit in there and that he played well when he was healthy. Hicks missed. I felt like he missed the whole season sometimes, but he missed, I think, six games with the foot issue. One sack, but the run defense and the defense overall was better when he and Vea were together. But I later asked Jason Light on the record, I haven't written it up yet, but I asked him about Hicks. And Light's body language was very much the opposite of Todd Bowles' body language. And Light sort of was like, whatever. We'll keeping the options open. Whereas Bowles was, he said Bowles like he's a great fit. So I think there may be some, disagreement at one buck when it comes to Hicks. Of course, Light wants to get younger, but so that was kind of interesting. Golston, I don't really think my vibe was that they're not saying no, we don't want him, but I don't think he's a priority for anybody. They really like this Greg Gaines. They're very much emphasizing that Gaines had an opportunity to return to the Rams. The Rams didn't want to lose him. I was able to confirm that with a Rams official. That they really love the guy. There's some guys that they say nice things about. There's other guys they really love. And, Bowles, I'm going to play it on the next podcast. I'll pull the audio. I asked Bowles. He really talked X's and O's with Gaines. And Light talked more about his motor. But Bowles thinks Gaines is a really great fit as far as with the type of things that he can do, the real intricate stuff that he thinks is a good replacement from Nacho and an upgrade.
Lee, as far as Akeem Hicks is concerned, I'll give you my vote, Lee, and then you give yours. I'm on Team Light. I didn't think Hicks was terrible, but I thought he was a disappointment, Lee, especially with the buildup that, you know, he's better than Sue in some areas and just good in some other areas. I didn't see it, Lee. I didn't see any durability from him. And, Lee, I certainly wouldn't call him an impact player for the Bucks. I'm a little down on Hicks. Where are you?
I lean toward that, but then I look at this, and it all boils down to wins and losses. When Hicks and Villa, not exactly stable health-wise, Villa, he missed a lot of time too. When Villa and Hicks both started, the Bucks were 6-3. That includes the loss to the Cowboys in the playoffs. So, you know, they finished with a losing record, but when both those guys started, they had a winning record. So, you know, you go ahead and weigh what that means.
Steve, did you bring up some point that I made the other day on the podcast to Jason Light in terms of, hey, Jason, are you surprised some of these guys, Fournette, Donovan Smith, or whatever, are still out there on the market? Did that come up, Steve, at all?
I did bring up Donovan Smith separate, you know, sort of off the record, and I get the feeling they don't really know or care too much about what's going to happen with Donovan Smith. Not that they don't like the guy, but, right. You know, they're not, you know,
they're moving on.
They're not paying attention necessarily to what's going on with Donovan Smith and who he might be talking to. As far as the running backs market, I did talk to Bowles and Light, and you know, we'll hit more of the offensive subjects later or in the next podcast this week, Ira, but Light was very clear that there's a lot of people around the NFL who no longer believe in paying running backs. And he said, I'm not speaking for the Bucks, but I'm speaking overall that that's the feeling around the league. He said it's a combination of, you know, the success of rookies, that this draft class is especially good at running back. And Bowles leaned more toward that everybody knows they need two running backs, that it's a two running back league now. Bowles was like, hey, Derrick Henry and the, who's the
Adrian Peterson. Yeah, those days are over, right?
Well, he brought up the guy up, Jonathan Taylor, Indianapolis. He said those guys are going to get their top dog carries and stuff, but otherwise you need two. And when you need two and you want two good ones, well, maybe you'd rather have two good ones than one great one and one guy you don't know too much about. But, you know, Light didn't dispute it. You know, the people don't want to pay running backs and the prices are coming down and there's a lot of good ones left and the Bucks may jump on them. But Light was very high on Keyshawn Vaughn, really put his foot in the ground for Keyshawn Vaughn not getting a chance, which he said before, but he was really adamant. You know, I'm sitting there next to him, Ira, you know, in a bar. He's finished a meeting. He's just all fired up. And he was really strong on that. And of course, they believe in Rashad White. Todd Bowles, however, Ira, mentioned Rashad White's fumbles. And nobody asked him about that. And it's obviously something that he's trying to send a message to White. Even though White wasn't a big fumbler, he did fumble on a kickoff. He did cough up a ball a couple of times. And Canales is a lunatic on the ball security and the fumbles. So I think maybe Rashad White has something to prove to the Bucks when it comes to ball security.
Steve, did you get the sense, you know, we've heard Bowles talk about Devin White before, but you were just spent a lot of time with Bowles. Steve, it seems like Bowles disagrees with the Devin White naysayers, the skeptics. He's very strong in supporting Devin White. Of course, Lee, Devin White goes into a huge season. He's looking for a big payday. If he plays very well, he might get it. He might get it from the Bucks or another team. Steve, what'd you pick up from Bowles and Light, you know, regarding Devin White?
Sage, you know what? I'm going to pull the plug on you here on this one. I'm going to refer everybody to when Todd Bowles was on the podcast with me, you, and Lee. We wrote about it, and Bowles articulated it beautifully. Devin White, he thinks, is the best player on this defense. So, I didn't ask from there. He laid it out and didn't need to ask about Devin White. Bowles was clear when he sat down with us that White is the guy.
Wait a minute. Mr. DeKemper, is Devin White the best player on this defense?
Not even close.
Devin White's not better than Lavonte David at this point.
Nope.
No, he's not
better than Jamel Dean. I don't know if he's better than Carlton Davis. I don't know if he's better than Vita Vea.
Or Winfield.
Oh, no, he's not better than Whitfield. No.
Todd Bowles made he answered that question, Ira. So you don't, I mean, what I think isn't as important. So the point is I didn't ask because Bowles said it, that he's the best player on the defense. He said he's the second or he's top two on the defense at that time. And I asked Bowles, who's number one? And he said it rotates every week. So basically he was saying Devin White's top two every single week and everybody else is, you know, vying to be in his league. So that's where they think of him. But Lee, I did go down the road with Light. I'm going to write it up with Light and Bowles about the, you know, what was in my craw, which is paying Jamel Dean all that money when you can buy a pass rusher. So I asked them both independently, and I even put it to Light as, hey, Jason, this smells like a very non-Light kind of move to pay an extraordinary record money to cornerbacks when, you know, you could use some pass rush help. And Light didn't dispute it. He didn't dispute it. He said, you know, we have to make a bit of a philosophical change, but, you know, it's just kind of the way it is right now. And but he said at the end of the day, we just didn't want to let go of a good player who's developed well, that is quality player. Those are the guys you got to find a way to keep. I sort of saw in his face, yeah, maybe we're paying too much at cornerback, but we're happy to do it because that's just where it is. But Bowles said there isn't anybody to pay on the defensive line or in the draft, that it's been kind of weaker on when it comes to the defensive line in the draft overall, and that teams aren't letting go of their guys and you got to pay where the quality is. And he didn't dispute it either, but he just said he doesn't have anybody to pay the big money there, and so they went with Dean, who they love. What do you think of that, Ira?
Is that when he started referencing Lawrence Taylor, Rusty?
This is all private, one-on-one chats away from the breakfast table. Right. What do you think of that, Ira? That they sort of acknowledge that, yeah, we're not investing on the front line the way you might think.
Lee, the way I look at it, I think this is a Todd Bowles call, pure and simple, Jamel Dean. Todd Bowles played safety. He knows the ins and outs of secondary play, defensive backfield. Jamel Dean is entering his prime years, Lee. That's another factor. He's not 29, and they didn't want to lose him. In some ways, he might have had a better year than Carlton Davis. Lee, I'm not sure you disagree with that. I think this was Bowles' pure, I'm not sure Light would have done it without Bowles pounding the table, and I think Bowles did pound the table for Levante David, who some in the organization might have been wavering about in terms of age, you know, which way this franchise is going at this point in the cycle and the arc of the franchise. And I think those two moves, it's got Bowles written all over them, and I don't necessarily disagree with them.
Yeah, I don't know whose handprints are on it, but whoever handprints are on it, I applaud them. You don't let good young players like this go. And it's also a little bit of evidence they're not banking on hope. They knew what they had in Dean. They knew Dean wanted to stay in Tampa Bay. So you keep him. Who are they going to get? That's banking on hope. Hope is not a strategy. Unfortunately, up until the time Bruce Arians got here, hope was too much of a strategy with the Bucs. They hoped Robert Ayers could get 8 sacks. They hoped this guy could do this. They hoped that guy could do that. It was all hope. With Jamel Dean, evidence. They knew what he could do. They knew he wanted to stay in Tampa Bay. Keep him. Can you imagine, Ira, if they let Jamel Dean go with the hope they could get a pass rusher, that you miss on the pass rusher, and you've got Sean Murphy bunting back there?
You're right, Lee, and you could throw Michael Johnson. Lee, remember Michael Johnson from Cincinnati?
Ghost Johnson, yeah.
Yeah,
oh.
You know, he didn't have much of a track record. He might have had a good half season the year before he signed
Ghost
up.
Ghost Johnson, you're bringing back the ugly, ugly memories of lousy, yeah. Lovie Smith and his golden touch of personnel moves.
That's right, and Johnson didn't work out, Steve. You know, it was awful. You throw him in with Collins, that bum they got from the Bengals. And that's a double disaster. Steve, on this topic of, you know, maybe there wasn't a lot out there. Frank Clark from the Chiefs was available. I don't think he's a great player. I think he's overpaid. And, you know, I follow the Chiefs closely. He's no Chris Jones, Frank Clark. Steve, there's a guy now, 5 years ago, I was pounding the table. Lee, you remember, Calais Campbell. And I said, Light, go get this guy. Go get him. And the Bucks didn't. And he turned, I think he was runner-up for Defensive Player of the Year that season.
Why don't you repeat that famous story of yours about Calais Campbell?
My point about Campbell, Steve, is simple. Now he's available, or maybe he just signed, but he was signed available. And, Steve, now he's old. And now he's not the player that he was when I was pounding the table for him. And those are the guys that are out there. You know, they're 34, 35 years old. Carlos Dunlap. They don't have much left. Campbell was a heck of a player, Steve, but he's not the same player.
Sage, an important question here because it ties to the Glazers, something they've said previously, and it ties to the philosophy here a little bit. And I got to get your take on it, but I got to remind everybody, BillCurryFord.com, that's where you shop. And we just heard, of course, about Florida's Elite Restoration, FloridasEliteRestoration.com. Don't forget it. Bookmark it. Read it. File it away so you know who to call when disaster strikes. Ira, Sean Murphy Bunting. I asked Balls about Sean Murphy Bunting.
Sean Murphy Bunting, I think it was this year you had called him at one point, maybe the smartest player on the defense. How tough was it to lose him, and what are your thoughts on that?
Sean's a good football player. You know, when you reach free agency, you have to make decisions, and I would love to have Sean back. I think maybe once Dean signed, we didn't have a whole lot of money to give out anyway. I think once Dean signed, you know, I guess he decided to go somewhere else. And, you know, we'll still be close forever and a day. I will never lose that from him, and I wish him all the best. But I still think he's a very good football player. Him getting hurt early on kind of hampered him some. But when he got back healthy, I think he played some good ball, and I think there's a lot of good football ahead for him.
He was very clear. He wanted him to come back, thought that he came back super strong. So I bring this up because he signed for $3.5 million with the Titans. That's not a lot of money. Bowles was almost dejected and wanted him back. He implied that he thought he could have maybe come back, but he jumped on a deal from the Titans and that's the way it went down. My point is that the Glazers in the past, previous years, they've said we never lost a free agent that we wanted to keep. And this is a second round pick, guy with a Super Bowl ring, guy who has a knack for interceptions, and 25 years old, a young player, and the coach likes him and wanted him. But they went with Greg Gaines, who's making $3.5 million to play nose tackle. What's your thought there on that picture I painted?
Steve, I don't think that Murphy Bunting rises to the stature of the kind of guys that Joel Glazer was referring to when he did make that statement to me at a previous owner's meeting. We don't really lose the guys that we really want to keep. Bowles, you know, look, Steve, given his preference, Bowles would have wanted Murphy Bunting to come back. Lee, to me, as a third corner, he's okay. I think they could get the same player in the draft. And I don't think it's a great loss. Do you want him back? Yeah. You know, if we can work it out, we do. But I think Levante David, Lee, had the Bucks put a full court press on and then seen him leave, you know, to go to Carolina. I don't think it's the same as Sean Murphy Bunting. I don't think there was, Lee, I don't think there was necessarily a strong consensus in the building about Sean Murphy Bunting. I think Bowles liked him, but in the end, he didn't like him like he liked Jamel Dean and Levante David.
I wish I would have been able to ask a Glazer this. Is Sean Murphy Bunting a guy that you didn't want to get loose? I don't think that's the definition of what Glazer was talking about, like you said, Ira. Murphy Bunting, nice guy, showed some flashes, had a hell of a playoffs, those games. And the postseason, he was dynamite. And sort of like Devin White, has never recaptured that moment. Can't stay on the field. So, I mean, if you're looking at it, if you're weighing, let's see, Jamel Dean or Sean Murphy Bunting, Levante David or Sean Murphy Bunting, Greg Gaines or Sean Murphy Bunting. Really? I hate to see him go, only because I got along with him, thought he was a nice guy, thought he was a really intelligent guy. How can I say this? Him and Scotty Miller, and there's a third person, the wag factor has been hurt worse than the Bucks have. this offseason.
Yeah, I'm with Leon Murphy Bunting, Steve. I mean,
his
okay.
girlfriend is, simply gorgeous.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Sage, before we get to an important topic, let me hit you with the kicker. Buccaneers signed kicker Chase McLaughlin, a guy who kicked for the Colts last year. And surprise, surprise, he's got the giant leg that Todd Bowles wants. The guy over the last 2 years is 13 of 16 from 50 yards or more. 2 years ago, he struggled from 40 to 49, which is where Suckup was perfect last year. And last year, he was better. From 40 to 49, he was 9 of 11. Bottom line, I got this information from the Bucs, from Light, and they just like the year that he had last year. And, he hit a higher percentage overall than Suckup last year. And he's younger, undrafted in 2019. He bounced around. He was with Cleveland in 2021. And anybody who goes to Cleveland needs another chance. And then he was good last year. So here he is. So what are your thoughts on this guy who turns 27 in a couple of weeks?
I'm going to be very clear about this, gentlemen. I'm going to be crystal clear. Remember that scene in A Few Good Men? Crystal clear. If this guy starts making every 54-yarder and struggles to make a 41-yarder, that's a disaster. And nobody will be reminding us about that disaster more than Mr. Lee DeKemper.
No.
And I might add, justifiably.
No, I won't harp on it. I've had my say. I hope he does well. But I love Jason Light. Love everybody with the Bucks. But I don't care if this ruffles feathers or not. Tell me I'm wrong. This organization has zero credibility when it comes to kickers. Zero.
I'm going to finish, Steve. I understand Lee's point. But, Steve, let me finish.
All right, wait. I got to disagree. only because Ryan Suckup was here 3 years. He did a great job. I don't know how you could.
One guy. I mean, my gosh. One guy out of 20 years? One guy.
May I finish, Mr. Isbitz? May I finish on my own podcast?
And then, by the way, this one guy, they chased him out the door. This one guy. So
I understand. I have the floor, gentlemen. I'm not done. All right. I said if this guy starts going, 11 for 14 from 53 yards, and he makes 60% from inside the 40, that's a disaster. So what I'm saying is I don't believe in trade-offs. The guy's got a long leg, but he's not accurate. I'm going to be very simple here. Find a good kicker. Find a good kicker. Everybody else does it. Go find a guy. And I don't mean one that's got a big leg, but he's shaky. I mean a guy that's good at everything. Go find one.
The sage has spoken. Well, if it gives you any comfort, Ira, of course, he was a dome kicker in Indianapolis. I did go look at his record on the road just to see if, the Bucks, what they were thinking there. And he did kick well on the road last year, so I'll give him that, including in some tough spots. He was 4 for 4 one day in Denver, so we'll hope for the best. All right, Ira, moving on.
Can I say this real quick about kickers and the Bucks?
Sure.
Does anything encapsulate the horrible, horrible evaluation of kickers this organization has had this century as when the Bucks, the fourth week of the season, maybe the fifth week of the season, Monday Night Football, they're playing at Carolina. It's a one-score game, late in the game. They bring a Roberto Aguayo out, kick a chip shot field goal, and the Bucks get on their knees in a prayer circle. That was a poster of the futility of this organization trying to find a kicker. You might see that when Scott Norwood attempted a field goal in a Super Bowl or maybe a playoff game. This was the fifth game of the year, and you're in a prayer circle.
Steve, Lee doesn't forget a thing, Steve. He doesn't forget anything.
Hey, Sage, just a quick fun nugget before we get to a couple of important things. Now, we focused a lot on the defense on this podcast from some of the stuff that came out of the NFL meeting in Phoenix. We're going to go heavy on the offense in the next episode. I got a lot of fresh stuff that no one's going to have anywhere else in between now and then on Baker Mayfield and the quarterback competition and some other stuff there. So we'll enjoy that in the next podcast. But Ira, Levante David, he was on Sirius XM NFL radio today. And for the Lee loves a good Lovie Smith bashing. So this is for Lee. Levante David was, interviewed, and Mark Dominic was one of the co-hosts. And, as they concluded the interview, Dominic asked him about his, pre-draft experience. And actually it was host Bruce Murray asked him about that. And Levante David talked about how before the draft, he was convinced that he was going to the Bears because of all the interactions that he had there. And oh, by the way, guess who the coach was? Lovie Smith of the Bears. The Bears picked before the Bucks in the second round of that draft, and they took a different linebacker. So thank you very much, Lovie Smith. We wouldn't have a Bucks icon if it wasn't for you. And I had never heard that story before. And David said he also had a ton of interest from the Eagles. He thought it was Bears or Eagles, but he was really leaning Bears because everything was so great and he spoke to them so many times. So there you go.
Steve, I'm glad you mentioned Levante David again, because I want to clarify something. I think there's a misconception out there. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but Steve, I do read the comments. I want our listeners to know that. You guys read the comments on the website. I do, too. And somebody at the bottom of my Todd Bowles column that had nothing to do with Levante David took a poke at me and mentioned Levante and said, our Hall of Fame voter, he doesn't even like Levante David and doesn't think he's a Hall of Famer. Let me clarify, because I looked stuff up again. Lee, he's got some impressive credentials. His numbers are impressive, and he's far from finished. He might play another 3 or 4 years. He might here or somewhere else after this season. But Lee, I also looked up Bobby Wagner and Luke Kuechly, and for whatever reason, whether it's right or wrong, Levante David's got like one first team All-Pro, one. Might have been 2013, and maybe two second teams. Well, Kuechly's got 5 first teams. Wagner's got like 6 first teams. What I'm saying is, Lee, I try to be realistic. I've been in that room for 20 years, and I know what kind of discussions go on. And who votes for the All-Pro teams? Lee, a lot of the same people that are in that room vote for the All-Pro teams. I'm not talking about Pro Bowls. They carry a lot of weight, and I think they should carry a lot of weight. This is not fan voting. And I'm not saying David can never get in, but he's going to be behind Kuechly and Wagner, depending on when these guys retire. And that's just the way it is, Lee. It's just the way it is. And you can talk about his 27 forced fumbles all you want. But, he was a contemporary of Wagner and Kuechly, and those guys made first-team All-Pros, and he didn't. And that's a fact. So it's not impossible for Levante David to wear a gold jacket in 10 years, but it's not going to be easy. That's all I'm saying. It's not going to be easy.
It might be easier because by the time Levante David, you've said it yourself, you won't be a selector when Levante David is
whoa. What the hell are you talking about, Ira? Go ahead, Lee.
I'll be 80 years old, right? Here's my point. It isn't really specifically about Ira, but basically new blood of selectors, younger guys, they're more apt to lean on, my view, they're more apt to lean on advanced stats than they are if a guy got on first team, second team, third team, fourth team. Hey! They're more apt to lean on advanced stats.
Maybe you're right. Yep.
Levante's advanced stats, it's a no-brainer. If you're going by advanced stats, it would almost be criminal not to put Levante in all. If you go by advanced stats. Because all his numbers, when you compare his numbers and you say the names of his contemporaries, It's like a no-brainer. It's like J.J. Watt. It's Keith. Every guy you mentioned with the Van Stats, that Levante David's up there, they're all like no doubt about it Hall of Famers.
Couple of layers to that, and you know, we'll be arguing this for the next 7-8 years, so we don't have to go too deep here. But I did put up something today, and I think Lee's making a lot of sense, and the newer crop of selectors and what they may be leaning more on. Plus, Levante David did raise his profile considerably in the last few years, getting all that attention and getting a Super Bowl and all that. But I put it on the website today because it came up during the radio show. Levante David, 39 combined interceptions and forced fumbles. 39.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, it's a very good number, Steve.
Bobby Wagner has 19. So Levante David has more than double the takeaways that coaches say is the most important part of defensive football that they covet so much. He's got more than Bobby Wagner times two. I mean, that's a strong argument in a lot of ways. And of course, he dwarfs Kuechly in that area as well. And I, you know, at the end of the day, Ira, you're on the money. You're correct, but I think Levante David, I think maybe what you undersell a little bit is that he's painting himself, if he can go two more solid years, as a historic figure in the league, just on stats alone. Doesn't mean he'll get in, but if he can paint himself as a historic player who was chronically underrated, you never know.
I'll say this. If you're going to make a case for Levante David 5 years after his retirement, you would not lack for material. You would not lack for material.
Here's one for you. David's on a team that Kuechly will never be on. You know, you talk about first team, second team, this team, that team. Called right. Super Bowl winner. Rings.
Yeah.
He's got a ring.
I believe Kuechly was defensive player of the year, Lee. That counts. That'll sure. help him. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. You mentioned the draft party, Ira, April 27th, Thursday, 7 o'clock, Ybor City. Big Storm Brewery. Now you can go to bigstormbrewery.com, get an idea of the menu, look at all the beers that you can sample. There's always new beers. Bigstormbrewery.com. Ybor City is the draft party, 7 o'clock. It's a huge place. There's plenty of room if you're worried about us overflow crowding it like we've done in the past. That's not going to happen here. It could. I hope it does, but it's a much bigger place and they got a little bit of outdoor seating. We're going to have a lot of fun. We got our Pick the Pick contest, which is going to drop $500 in the lap of one intelligent draft guru among our fan base. And we'll have some tiebreakers for that. The cash is courtesy of Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration. Thank you, Josh Martin and the team over there. And Josh has got another $500 for a special contest that we're going to be having. Going to put more information on that at joebucksfan.com, all to give away at the draft party, Big Storm Brewery, Ybor City, upstairs, Centro Ybor. Follow them on social media, and you've got all your Big Storm tap rooms to sample the beer before the draft or to load up if you're going to be watching at home. Big Storm Brewery in Odessa, Clearwater, Cape Coral, Amway Center in Orlando, Ybor City, and, of course, the flagship in Cleveland. I almost said Cleveland, Ira. And the flagship in Clearwater on 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road with the giant outdoor patio, Big Storm Brewery. Ira, look, got to bring this up. It's too important. A lot of layers to it. Sage, NFL annual meeting, formerly the NFL owners meetings. It's the strangest time in all of sports, I think, when media gets to hang out with owners and all the massive security involved. Maybe there was a threat this year or something. I don't know. But there was so much security to a different level this year. Billionaires hanging out with bloggers. Obviously, not everybody gets into the owners' meetings, but media is there. All the owners, all the GMs on good behavior because the owners are around. All the coaches on good behavior. And all the league meetings are going on. And everybody gets to hang out and mingle for a few days. And it's sort of a can't-miss thing, except JoeBucksFan.com was the only outlet from the Tampa area, Bucks covering outlet, in addition to Rock Riley, who was doing some other work there, but he's not a Bucks beat writer or anything like that. And that's it. TampaBay.com, Fox Sports, ESPN, the official TV partners, weren't out there. Even Buccaneers.com didn't send any of their staff out there as far as the writers and the reporters. They did send a cameraman. That's how everybody was able to watch the live stream. So it was just me. I'm not going to call it me. I'm going to say it's just JoeBucksFan.com because we work together and we decide that we're going to cover it. And I think it's pretty stunning, Ira. I want your take on that. And while it's, for me, it's fun to do a victory lap kind of thing. Yay, we buried all these clowns. And I got a lot of that feedback from people across the NFL. And that's true, of course. But the reality is it's very sad for the Bucks. It's not good for anybody. You know, we want coverage of the team. We want hype around our team. We want outlets to explore all the cool stories that are going on with the Bucks. We want people to care. The fans care. It's not good for the fans. And I don't like it, but what's your thoughts, guys?
I don't think there's any question that it's a harbinger of things to come from a national media perspective, maybe even a local media perspective in terms of going on a road trip. Maybe now you don't. Lee, it all comes back. And, you know, look, we don't have to be geniuses, Lee. There's no Tom Brady. There's no Tom Brady, Lee. There's no buzz. Todd Bowles himself, Lee, used the word aura. You know, we're missing the aura of Tom Brady. Lee, it impacts so many ways in terms of how many primetime games they're going to get. Lee, right now, this team is very far under the radar. Lee, they're so far under the radar, they can see the Chicago Bears, you know, and the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, that's the way it is, Lee, until they prove otherwise. Nobody's getting riled up about a battle between Mayfield. just not, Lee. And I think we're going to have to get used to it. Unless something dramatic happens and Kyle Trask all of a sudden develops into the guy, or Mayfield resurrects his career. Lee, a lot of it has to do with the quarterback situation. But, Lee, if Tom Brady's on this team, you know, Todd Bowles' table is jammed. It's packed. Instead of Isbitz, you know, standing there while Isbitz is in between his bites of bacon and eggs, firing away questions basically by himself. No Brady.
Well, I think what Steve was getting at, it's not so much the national perspective. Oh, that we knew that was coming. To quote Tony Kornheiser, Brady's the only reason anybody ever cared about that damn team. So, but what Steve's getting at, I believe, and let's rip the Band-Aid off the scab. Steve and I are fortunate that we're profitable. We're successful. Other outlets are not. They don't have the money to send people to Phoenix or wherever. You were bringing up the other day, Ivor, you were outraged that the Lightning and Bruins were, was not staffed on the road. They just don't have the money. And that's just a fact of life in the 21st century. The old school media is not a money-making operation anymore. They're in the red. Again, Steve and I are very fortunate. You know, I thank the gods above that we're successful. Others are not. It's as simple as that. And that's sad because that's less local coverage for fans of the team they love. And I'm not happy about it. I'm not ripping people about it. It's just, Steve used the perfect word. It's the sad reality of the current state of affairs. It's not going to improve. It's not going to improve short of newspapers fully changing the way they cover teams. Fully changing, and they're not apt to do that. Well, these are the results. You know, it's like a restaurant, and they have a dish. The dish they couldn't make enough of 10, 15, 20 years ago. People changed their taste. Now people don't want it, and the restaurateur and the chef are unwilling to change the menu. Well, you get that's what happens. They're unwilling to change. And like I said, there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not thankful for Steve, for you, Ira, and for our readers, that I've been able to live the life I live covering an NFL team as opposed to God knows what else I'd be doing for a living. You know, that's just the way it is.
It is sad, Steve. You know, for somebody that worked at the Tribune for 25 years, I'm a newspaper guy, Steve. I am. You worked for the Tribune, and, you know, it's tough to see what's going on in our industry.
It's not just newspapers. It's the TV stations. They've been hit, too. I can't remember where it was recently. Maybe while I was in Las Vegas, I read a magazine story about, it wasn't a magazine, it was online, but it was a magazine-type story about the death of local sports broadcasting.
Yes.
And it's pretty much what the newspapers have gone through. Only now it's the local TV broadcast. And I'm not saying there's any glee or anything. I'm bummed out by it. And I'm sure Bucks fans are bummed out by it because that's less coverage. And it's not because they don't want to. It's the finances. It's not there anymore.
Well, no, I'm going to disagree that it is a don't want to. Because bottom line is, but my receipts, Ira, for my trip out there are about $1,000. So these outlets do have $1,000. It's a decision that was made. It speaks to their perception of the popularity of the Bucks. It also speaks to the fact that they don't get enough traffic where they think it's worth $1,000. But it's not just the focus on the newspapers, I think, is a little off. You've got The Athletic. You've got Fox Sports, Digital. You've got ESPN, who all decided just not worth it. Just, you know, the Bucks. We don't care about the Bucks. And part of that I don't get because there's a lot of fans here that do care. We see it with our traffic, and it's a little glaring after these Brady years to see the broader picture of that. I'll tell you a little story. There was a prominent ESPN analyst, television analyst, who sat at the table listening to Todd Bowles for like 4 minutes and did not ask a question. Just was listening in, interested, didn't ask a question. Which, what? How do you not have one question? Not even a Brady question. It's like, it was pretty stunning, Ira. But I felt important, guys, to just say, no, they do have the money. They just chose not to go there because, big picture, yes, they're hurting for money, but they could have gone. Somebody could have gone. I don't like it, Ira.
Well, I do like the fact, Lee, that we were represented out there. We can't speak for other outlets, but we decided it's money well spent. Steve did a heck of a job out there. He hasn't written up half of what he got out there, you know, and our readers and listeners are going to be the beneficiaries of that trip. I'm very thankful that this organization decided it was worth sending somebody out to an annual meeting. Lee, the good news for everybody else is it's probably the meetings are probably coming back to Florida next March, and I hope you can make the trip from Tampa to Orlando.
Yeah, that's part of the funny part is that next year they'll be in Orlando, and you'll have 25 people from the Tampa media out there doing Lord knows what. Sage, I got to bring this up just because it was a breaking news thing today, and you know, you guys are of the same vintage, and I thought I'd give you a chance to weigh in. Jack Harris, the iconic radio guy in Tampa, used to do a lot of sports work, was the voice of the Tampa Bay Rowdies a million years ago, you know, had some sports connections over the years. They got fired from his job at WFLA. Not really sure what happened, but that's the report that's out there. At 81 years old, you know, an icon in Tampa. Do you have a Jack Harris story, or you want to chime in at all?
Well, I knew Ted Webb a lot more than I knew Jack Harris, Lee, because I used to do Ted Webb's show called Sports Wrap, and it was on Sunday nights at about 10:30, and I was a regular guest on there. Roy Cummings was a regular also, and some other people. So I got to know Ted Webb, quite a character. And Ted Webb and Jack Harris had that radio show together, Lee, very popular. It kind of goes along to what you were saying about the Hall of Fame board, Lee. I probably won't recognize it 10 years from now. And time marches on, right, Lee? Things change when you get a little bit older. You know, you're vulnerable. Younger audience, Lee, different audience. What I didn't like is, now I don't know the full story, but based on Jack Harris's Lee preliminary comments, it wasn't handled very classily by 970. I think he deserved better. Changes in the media landscape are incessant. It's happening all over, people losing their jobs at NFL Network, ESPN, 970 moves on. From what I knew, Lee, Jack Harris was well-respected in the community.
I think I've only met Jack Harris once or twice. You know, pleasantries, hi, how you doing? He probably didn't know who I was. That's okay. I lost a lot of respect for him, and Steve, if you want to cut this out, I understand. I lost a lot of respect for Jack Harris, the way he treated Steve one time when he interviewed Steve live on the air. He had an agenda, and I lost a lot of respect for him as a result. And so I didn't listen to his show after that. And frankly, I don't listen to local radio. I haven't in years. There's a reason why I pay for Sirius XM. There's a reason why I listen to podcasts. And that's just the way it is. And it's unfortunate that an icon like that, a local icon, wasn't allowed to have one more show to say goodbye to his listeners. Who listened to him. It was like 40-some years. I mean, that's sad. And apparently, per the Tampa Bay Times article, they multiple times reached out to iHeartRadio and their representatives to get their side of the story. They received no feedback from iHeartRadio. So the only thing we have to go by is Jack Harris's words. And apparently that's the way iHeartRadio wants it. And it sounds like it was an unpleasant separation.
Yeah. It reminds me of when the Trib was put out the pasture. We didn't get a chance to put out a final edition, Steve. Didn't get a chance.
I knew you were going to say that, Ira, and I just wanted to comfort you. When we fire you, Ira, I'll give you at least three podcasts to say goodbye. At least three podcasts. I promise.
And I'm going to use all three of them, Isbeth.
Well, Sage, look, we've hit on a lot of points, and we've got a lot more to talk about with another podcast this week, really diving into the offense. I'm not sure we missed much on the Bucs defense here, Ira. It's an evolution process, but you know, Bulls expects this unit to be good, and they've got the core back. You guys are pretty harsh on Devin White, but you don't agree with the coach. It's going to be fun going forward as it relates to him. All right, Sage, look.
Steve, this podcast was so long, my coffee got cold. I got cold coffee.
I had an idea. You could drive over to the Tampa Bay .com headquarters and, you know, see if you could get a refill over there.
Come on, Steve. Come on.
All right. So, hey, it's been fun, Ira, and we will be back. We march on. Don't forget the draft party. If you've made it this long into the podcast, you love Ira Kaufman, and many of you listen all the way through. Come out to the draft party, Big Storm Brewery, Ybor City, 7 o'clock, and we're going to have a blast. Draft starts at 8. Bucks will probably pick around 10:40 if they don't trade the pick. And it's always a good time. Great food. We're going to have some giveaways. We told you about the Florida's Elite Restoration Contest and their $1,000 they're handing over. But it's going to be a good time for all. Thanks, Bill Curry Ford. And we'll be back next time.